Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, Sag Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
So good, so good, so good.
New markdowns are on at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save even more, up to 70% on dresses, tops, boots, and handbags to give and get.
Because I always find something amazing.
Just so many good brands.
I get an extra 5% off with my Nordstrom credit card. Total queen treatment.
Join the Nordy Club at Nordstrom Rack to unlock our best deals. Big gifts, big perks. That's why you rack.
You're tuned into Auto Intelligence, live from Auto Trader, where data, tools, and your preferences sync to make your car shopping smooth.
They're searching inventory.
Oh, yeah.
They find what you need.
They're going to find
it. You can make a budget for your wallet to help you succeed.
Mm.
Pricing's precise and true.
So true.
It's smarter car shopping.
Ooh.
Just for you.
Oh, it's just for you.
Ooh.
Find your next ride at autotrader.com. Powered by Auto Intelligence.
Una silla de masajes puede parecer extravagante. 8 configuraciones diferentes, intensidad ajustable, además es calefaccionado. Y se siente tan bien. Sí, una silla de masajes puede parecer extravagante. Y 2, bueno, aún más. Pero cuando esas sillas de masajes vienen con un auto, se vuelven bastante prácticas. El Volkswagen Tiguan con funciones premium como los asientos delanteros con masaje disponibles. Solo parece extravagante.
It's the amazing Rico Bronya podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Rico Bronya, welcome into episode number 587 of the Rico. I'm your host, Evan Roberts. We are going to dive very deep into the position player portion of free agency. And so before we go through a lot of the different names of potential Met targets, let's remind ourselves what this Met roster even looks like, because it has been a month and a half since the Mets have played a game, and sometimes we forget, oh, that's right, that guy doesn't have any options. He's going to be on the team. Oh, right, that guy's a free agent. He's no guarantee to be on the team. I looked at the Met roster, the current Met roster, so obviously it doesn't include Pete Alonso, who's a free agent, doesn't include Starling Marte, who's a free agent, and I pieced it with the locks, the guys that are 1,000% going to be on the Mets roster barring injury, the I'm pretty sure they're going to be on the Mets roster, and then guys that I doubt will be on the Mets opening day roster. And the reason I want to start there is as we go through all of these free agents, it's good to know how many slots there are even going to have available. Not that the Mets are going to fill it all up with free agents. They obviously could make trades. There could be internal options that make the team, but it's a nice exercise in reminding ourselves who's actually here. So in terms of the locks, Francisco Lindor is a lock. Juan Soto is a lock. Brandon Nimmo, despite the Mets quote-unquote spitballing trade ideas, he is pretty close to a lock. And then you've got the really close to locks, like Francisco Alvarez is very likely to be on this team. I know earlier in the offseason, I put together a trade proposal for Tarek Skubal. I included Francisco Alvarez. Sure, there's a world in which Alvarez is traded. I don't think the Mets are looking to trade him. I don't think it's something they're trying to do by any stretch. But yeah, as they pursue an ace, his name gets brought up. He's not necessarily going to be a deal breaker. But for the sake of this exercise, Francisco Alvarez is very likely on the roster. Luis Torrens is very likely on the roster. So I've got 5 of the 13 spots. Remember, most of the time, it's going to be 13 position players. and 13 pitchers. That's usually how things are broken down. So I look at this roster and say there are five locks or close to locks. Then you've got the guys who I think are going to be on this team. Brett Beatty has an option left, but considering the way he played, I think he's going to be on this team. Could he be traded? Sure. I think he's going to be on this team. Mark Vientos, I think, is in that same batch. Is it possible the Mets trade Mark Vientos? Of course, but I think he's going to be on this team. Tyrone Taylor, I've heard it kind of bantied about that the Mets could non-tender him a contract. I'd be surprised by that. It's an option. It's certainly a possibility. But considering the hole in center field, the fact that the Mets are probably going to try to piece it together until they deem Carson Bench is ready, which could happen sooner rather than later, I'd assume Tyrone Taylor is on this team. And the other guy that, barring trade, we have to assume is on this team is Luis Angel Acuña, because he no longer will have options in 2026. So Acuña, who spent a lot of time in the minor leagues, was up and down a little bit. I wouldn't say the Syracuse shuttle, but, you know, spent some time in the minor leagues. I think Acuña, barring trade, is very likely to be on this roster, even if it's in the role I described a few Ricos ago of being that super utility player, a guy who is speed off the bench, a guy who's a glove off the bench, or dare I say, depending on the way the roster kind of finishes out, maybe has a chance to compete for the second base job. That gets us now to 9 of the 13 slots. You've got two other guys that I would predict to you right now, as we record this, Rico, the week of November 16, 17, 18, will not be on the Mets opening day roster, starting with Jeff McNeil. I think the Mets are going to trade him. This is a guy that most of us wanted to see the Mets ship out a year ago. I think with 1 year left on his contract, it is likelier than not that Jeff McNeil is not on this roster. The other guy who is, I'd say it's more than 50-50 he's not on the roster, is actually Ronnie Mauricio. Remember, the Mets kept him in the major leagues to not exhaust the final option. And that was a little bit of a controversy, right? That Mauricio was up here, never really played, didn't have much of a role. And David Stearns admitted it a couple of Ricos ago when we were listening to David's answers from the GM meetings, that a part of why he was at the major league level was so that he wouldn't be sent down. So he has an option. So I would think he's going to start the year at AAA. So that gets us to 9 of 13 slots. So we got some wiggle room. We're going to go through all the main position player free agents, and we're going to play this exercise. How does this guy fit in a world in which Pete Alonso is also brought back? And how does this guy fit if he's replacing Pete Alonso? Because a lot of these guys would be deemed as Alonso replacements. Let's start with the free agents that received the qualifying offer. We've gone over this before, but real quick, if you are offered the QO and you reject it and the Mets sign this player, they would have to give up a draft pick to sign them. There are 5 position players where the qualifying offer was made to them. We'll start with Kyle Tucker. Kyle Tucker is widely considered the premier player on the market. I think it's a combination of his age and certainly his ability. I mean, Kyle Tucker's had a hell of a season, and I don't think anyone is going to bat an eye about giving up a draft pick for him. I don't think the QO attachment to Kyle Tucker makes any difference. He's going to be 29 years old, which, while not as young as Soto upon entering free agency, I mean, 3 years older, which feels like a lot, you will certainly notice it in this edition of the Rico. And maybe you've noticed it by just watching baseball all these years. Free agents tend to be in their 30s. So when you do get a guy who's 29 years old, it's special. Kyle Tucker is not coming off the greatest year of his career. And I think over the last 2 years, Kyle Tucker has kind of gained this reputation as he doesn't play 162 games. And he doesn't. I mean, last year he missed about 30 games and did not hit in the second half of the year. The year before that, he was amazing, had a great year, but missed half the season. He's coming off a year last year in which he had 22 home runs, drove in 73 runs, hit .266, had an .840 OPS, and played his normal Gold Glove defense in right field. Kyle Tucker is a very good player. But considering the commitments the Mets have already made financially, I just don't see a world where the Mets are going to get involved. If the Mets shocked us and signed Kyle Tucker, would I think we all be excited? Of course, he's a hell of a player. I don't think anyone's going to throw him back. Is he going to be worth the $40 million a year I don't think so. He is not Juan Soto. I know he's very different because he's a better defender, so you certainly have that attribute. I think in the past, you'd look at Kyle Tucker and say he'd steal more bases, though that's not the case anymore after the year Soto had. He's also one real positive thing about Kyle Tucker, besides the Gold Glove defense, besides the pop. He doesn't strike out a lot. Kyle Tucker has never struck out 100 times in a major league season. Obviously, the last couple of years, he hasn't been fully healthy, but even in the healthy seasons he had, like 2023, his last fully healthy season, probably the best year of his career, pound for pound, I guess you could argue it, led the league in RBIs with 112, 886 OPS. He only struck out 92 times. He's a hell of a player, but I think the issue is twofold. Number one, I mentioned the contract. The Mets already have long, long commitments to Lindor, to Juan Soto, even a Brandon Nimmo. I doubt they're going to throw in an 11-year contract to Tucker, which, by the way, basically takes him till he's 40. So think about, not this season would be great, but think about 8 years from now. You know, and imagining Soto and Tucker in their late 30s. It's just not a fit. And if the Mets did sign him, you also have to ask yourself, okay, he's a Gold Glove defensive right fielder. Where does he play? He played left field early in his career. He's not a center fielder, so I think you'd rule that out. Would you just ask him to shift back to left field? And if that's the case, where does Brandon Nimmo play? David Stearns made pretty clear at the GM meetings they're not asking Juan Soto to become a full-time DH at this point in his career. So position-wise, you have to get creative. And I'm not really sure where you go. And the truth is, they're not going anywhere because they're not going to be interested in him. He is not going to be a guy the Mets are attached to. So we push him to the side. Player number two with the qualifying offer is Bo Bichette. Bo Bichette has been projected, if you look at MLB trade rumors, and we use them when we were looking at the starting pitching free agents, just a frame of reference in terms of what a contract's going to look like. There is a projection that Bo Bichette would be looking at 8 years, $280 million. Bo Bichette has the same appeal as Tucker in terms of being really young. In fact, he's younger than Kyle Tucker. He's going to be 28 years old early in spring training. So you are talking about a player who you have for the first 2 years of this new contract still in their 20s. But much like Kyle Tucker, it is similar. Despite being young, the last two seasons, he's missed time. This past year, he missed the final month of the year, missed the first few rounds of the postseason, luckily came back for the World Series. When he played, he had a wonderful year and had a bounce-back season. The year before that, in 2024, not only did he miss half the season, like Kyle Tucker, unlike Kyle Tucker, when Bo Bichette played, he was awful. Now, I think Bichette has done enough throughout his career where clearly 2024 is an outlier. 225 average, 598 OPS. He has been nowhere near those kinds of numbers throughout his major league career. He's actually been pretty damn consistent when you look at him. 29 home runs, 102 RBIs in 21, 24 home runs, 93 RBIs in 22, 20 home runs, 73 RBIs in 2023, and hit 306 that year, the second time. Actually, he's hit over 300 a few times in his career. 24 was the outlier, the terrible season at 225. And in this past year, 311 with 18 home runs, 94 RBIs. Hits for a good average. I mean, that's rare to see in this day and age. So what do I think of Bo Bichette? We talked about him briefly on the last Rico in the mailbag. I think he's a hell of a player. I like the fact that he's young. I like the fact that he certainly has an openness to moving off of shortstop. It almost feels like he's going to play a position besides shortstop next year, whether it's third base or second base. I guess my hesitation is not with the player. It's with the fit. It's the fact that the Mets have young, high potential position players who play the same positions as Bo Bichette. So you sign him to an 8-year, $210 million deal, whatever that looks like. What does that do to the future of Jet Williams? Does it make it more likely that they trade him? So I like Bichette as a player. And again, I think it's very similar to Kyle Tucker. If all of a sudden we get the shocking announcement, the Mets have signed Bo Bichette, I think we'd be excited to be acquiring a player of that caliber. I just don't love the fit. I think that Ronnie Mauricio still has great potential and deserves a shot. Jet Williams hasn't even gotten that shot at the major league level. Brett Beatty is coming off a really good year at third base. This is not me prospect hugging, because trust me, I want the Mets to add some of the free agents we're going to talk about. I just don't know if the guy who's probably lined up to be a second baseman, third baseman, is the way to go. Let's get to Kyle Schwarber. He is the other guy with the qualifying offer. We've talked a lot about Kyle Schwarber as a potential replacement for Pete Alonso, that he is one of the few guys on the market who, from a power perspective, from a run-producing perspective, can absolutely replace Pete. He's a little bit older than Pete. He's going to be 33 years old on opening day, so a couple of years older. But he is coming off a 56 home run season. And over the last 4 years, he's been Alonso-like in terms of the power consistency. 46 and 22, 47 and 23. It was down to 38 in 2024, and then up to 56 a year ago. I've got no reason to believe that because of his age, his power is going anywhere. I think that the Kyle Schwarber we've seen over the last couple of years is likely to be the guy we see. He's very durable, like Alonso. He goes out and plays every game. I think what helps him is that he's a DH. And there's nothing wrong with being a DH. The Mets have actually been horrific with the DHs they've had. But the problem when you lock in with a DH is you lose that ability to have Brandon Nimmo DH 50 games. You lose the ability of Pete coming back and DHing a bunch of games. You know, we went over the fit of Tucker, and really there is no fit. In Bichette's case, it shouldn't affect Alonso because he would be signed to play second base. Now, it may affect the bottom line in terms of how much Steve Cohen wants to spend, because if you're giving Bo Bichette $200 million and now you're going to have to give Pete at least 30 a year, who knows how many years, I don't know if they want to go down that financial commitment. Schwarber complicates it in terms of fit.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
He, to me, is more clearly an Alonso replacement, with the thinking being you can improve your defense at first base by bringing in a glove first, or at least a first baseman who's just a better all-around defensive first baseman, and you don't lose the slug that you lost with Pete because you just brought in Kyle Schwarber. That's the appeal. The more I've thought about it, the more it's not ideal. Because if Pete Alonso's going to DH, or at least be willing to DH, which he is, or DH a bunch of games, wouldn't you rather have a guy that could also play the field? And I know that some of you guys think he's the worst defensive first baseman ever, but Kyle Schwarber literally doesn't play the field. He's played the outfield 13 times in the last 2 years. It's over for him. It's done. He hasn't played first base. He played first base 10 times in 2021 with the Boston Red Sox. That's basically it for his major league career. So he is one of those guys that if you bring in, he's the DH. And from a lineup perspective, I think it's fine. I think he's a fair offensive replacement for Pete. But I don't love the fact that I don't get that kind of versatility of having numerous guys be able to DH. Let's move on to two more players who received the qualifying offer, and you'll notice there's quite a drop from Kyle Tucker, Bo Bichette, Kyle Schwarber, where I think we'd all agree, forgetting the fit or if you like the player or the contract, we could all agree or disagree on that. I don't think any of us are afraid of giving up a draft pick for any of those players. A draft pick is not holding up signing Kyle Tucker or signing Bo Bichette or signing Kyle Schwarber. Not signing them would be about a bunch of other things that we just talked about. It's not going to be about the pick. But the two players I'm about to say, the pick's a problem. Let's start with Trent Grisham. First of all, I have zero interest in giving Trent Grisham a multi-year contract. He had a wonderful year last year for the New York Yankees. He deserves a lot of credit for that. But much like Jurickson Profar, when he was a free agent coming off a big year, did anybody literally have enough confidence to say, I want to give that guy a four-year contract? Grisham is young, like a few of the other guys we mentioned. He's 29 years old and will have a full season as a 29-year-old. But look at his career. He's a career 218 hitter. The last three seasons until this one, he was on the interstate. He was hitting in the ones. He was a non-tender candidate last year for the New York Yankees. That's how bad he was. So even though he had 34 home runs, which is fantastic, and he had an 811 OPS, which is fantastic, and I'll tell you this, watching him every day, I think that's the bias that good and bad I'd have with the Yankee player. Doing the job I do, I try to watch every inning of every Yankee game, and somehow I'm close to pulling it off. He's not that good defensively. That's what I'll tell you. And I don't need a metric to tell me that. He's average. He's average. He's also not fast. Like, I think there was a belief, oh, Trent Grisham's fast. He's not. He's not fast. He's average defensively. And he's coming off a career season that I'd be stunned he ever matches again. The only way I would be interested in Trent Grisham is if I had him on a one-year contract. And the only other way I'd be interested in Trent Grisham is if I had him on a one-year contract in which there was no attachment of a draft pick. Well, unfortunately, that's not happening. I guess the only way that could happen is if he turns down the qualifying offer. I'm sorry, accepts the qualifying offer, goes back to the Yankees on a one-year, $22 million deal, and then the Mets acquire him for nothing, right? Like the Yankees just say, you know what? Damn, we didn't think he'd accept it. We'll just give him away for nothing. Other than that, I have no interest in him. Zero. I would almost rather say to myself, you know what? I'll live with Tyrone Taylor in center field until Carson Benj is ready. And that's the other problem. You know, I don't think Grisham is that good. I don't think he's that good defensively. So if you bring him in, Benj is now ready, and you move him to left and you move him to right, it's like, it's an upgrade. It is, but how big of an upgrade is it truly? And also, if he's turning down the qualifying offer, he's going to want a multi-year contract and a lot of money. No gracias. And the last guy who received the qualifying offer is Gleyber Torres of the Detroit Tigers. Gleyber Torres, believe it or not, is only 29 years old. He'll be 29 in December. He's been around so long, he feels older. He had a solid year for Detroit last year. 750 OPS, 16 home runs, 74 RBIs. He basically replicated the year he had before that with the Yankees. His WAR was a lot higher, so I assume his defense was a lot better. Not getting to watch him every day. I don't have interest in Gleyber Torres for a myriad of reasons. A, the draft pick, not worth it. And B, kind of the same thing I talked about at second base. I don't love going after a second baseman unless that guy can play other positions.
This episode is brought to you by Jack Daniels. Jack Daniels and music are made for each other. They share a rhythm in the craft of making something timeless while being a part of legendary nights. From backyard jams to sold-out arenas, there's a song in every toast. Please drink responsibly. Responsibility.org. Jack Daniels and Old No. 7 are registered trademarks. Tennessee whiskey, 40% alcohol by volume. Jack Daniel Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is presented by State Farm. Having insurance isn't the same as having State Farm. It's like needing the protection of an offensive guard on the football field, but getting an elementary school crossing guard. Sure, they're both guards, but you can only trust one to keep your quarterback safe when the game is on the line. So don't settle for just any insurance when there's State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
So we'll transition to Luis Arraez, who I've talked about. I think Luis Arraez is different than Gleyber Torres for a few reasons. Number one, no qualifying offer. Number two, he can play first base. So unless you're giving Gleyber Torres a first baseman's glove, which you're not, Luis Arraez gives you that extra position he's able to play. But the other reason and the appeal that I have of Luis Arraez, especially if he's not going to get paid, and he may not, is bringing a skill set that's unique to you. A skill set that a lot of players around baseball don't have. And that's hitting for a high average and never striking out. I'm not ignoring the fact that he doesn't hit for power. I'm not ignoring the fact that his OPS is average at best, which is connected to the lack of power and is connected to the fact he doesn't walk a lot. He is literally a one-trick pony. I know that. I'm not denying that. I'm not going to make him a player he's not. He's a one-trick pony. He's a high batting average, low strikeout. I assume that's the same trick, unless you want to split him up. Maybe we'll call it a two-trick pony. He hits for a very high batting average, and he doesn't strike out. And I find that appealing in a lineup like this, where you've got guys like Juan Soto, as great of a hitter as he is. Juan Soto will strike out. Francisco Lindor will strike out. Brandon Nimmo will strike out. Pete Alonso, if he comes back, will strike out. I like having that difference. I also think that Arraez protects you. So I talked earlier about second base and how I do want to give some of the young players an opportunity there, whether it's Ronnie Mauricio, whether it's Luis Angel Acuña, whether it's Jet Williams. The beauty of Arraez is I can see him filling three different spots on this team. We've gone over the offense. If you don't like him as an offensive player, I don't know what to tell you. We just disagree. If you don't value it because you say he hits for no power, he has no speed, the OPS is average, I don't want him. Okay, we disagree. It's fine. I mean, to me, I like balancing the lineup with different things. And having a guy that can hit 320, which he's done before, win a batting title, and also never strike out, which means a lot of those outs he makes can actually be productive, I would like that in a lineup like this. But defensively, he's not great defensively. But he could, and this is the way I envision this, be the second baseman until one of those young players takes the job. You're protecting yourself from one of the young players not taking the job. It's the thing David Stearns wants to do, right? David always says, you want to leave an opportunity for young players. Well, there's an opportunity. Luis Arraez is the second baseman until someone takes it from him. When someone takes it from him, Luis Arraez can be the designated hitter and play a lot of first base. I don't see a problem with that. And considering how bad the DH position has been for the Mets over the years, it's bad. You can't tell me that having a guy who hits 315 and never strikes out would be bad for the DH spot. It would not. So I see Luis Arraez in that fit with this team. Let's go to Alex Bregman. Alex Bregman is projected to get, I would say, a similar contract to Alonso, but probably more years, even though Alex Bregman is actually a little bit older. But maybe it's the position he plays. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's just his size, and we kind of stereotype the way a player looks. But Alex Bregman is going to be 32 years old on opening day. So it's not a huge age difference from Pete, but he's projected to get like a six-year contract. Well, 6 years. I mean, let's do the math together. 32, 33, 34, 35, 36, 37. You have that guy till he's 37 years old. Now, the appeal of Alex Bregman is that he's a Gold Glove defensive third baseman. He is another one of those guys, not quite like Arraez, but puts the bat on the ball. He's never struck out 100 times in his career. He hits for a decent amount of power, 20 to 25 home runs a year. He had the 1 year where he hit 40, but that was the juiced ball year. He's a grinder. He hits for a solid batting average. Again, not quite Arraez, but again, he does things Arraez can't do, like hit 25 home runs in a year and play Gold Glove defense. And the other attribute that Bregman brings that is very difficult to measure is a difference to the locker room. He brings a difference. I am going to be realistic with you. If you told me the Mets could sign both Alex Bregman and Pete Alonso, I'd be ecstatic. And we all would be. It gives you a position of strength of trading Brett Beatty, maybe for pitching help, or even having Brett Beatty be a part of that second base combination. It makes your lineup just deeper. You know, it felt like the Met lineup was missing something last year. And I talked about it all year. They didn't score enough runs. So the idea of Bregman and Alonso, of course, fits. They play two different positions. B gives you even more trade capital because Beatty becomes available and makes the Mets a better team. But I'm not going to lie to you. I would be very, 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 very surprised if that happened. I think Steve Cohen wants to win. There's no question. Again, I just don't see multiple long-term contracts to guys in their 30s. I guess the only scenario where this could happen is if Pete settles on a short-term contract and the Mets make a long-term commitment to Bregman, because I think that's what it's going to take, and somehow they win the Alonso Derby again by giving him a short-term deal. But I don't see that happening. So would I like Bregman along with Alonso? I think we all would. I don't think it's realistic. So I think you're more looking at Bregman as one of those Pete Alonso replacements where you're losing power, you are improving defensively, you're changing the complexion of the locker room, and as a totality, as an offensive player, like, is Alex Bregman as good as Pete Alonso? I mean, they're not that far off. They're just different. And sometimes it's tough to compare when they're so different, but you know, that's where I think OPS is such a good barometer of that. You know, Bregman hits for a higher batting average. He gets on base more. He doesn't hit for as much power. Now, envisioning Bregman with as many guys on base potentially as would be the case if he's sitting behind Juan Soto and behind Francisco Lindor, I mean, this could be a 100 RBI year for Bregman for the first time since 2019 if you put him in a lineup like that. So I like Bregman. I think he's a hell of a player. I think it would certainly change the dynamic of the room. I'm more intrigued by him in combination with Pete Alonso, even if I don't think that's realistic. We've done a little bit on Munetaka Murakami. I think a couple of different editions of the Rico, maybe a couple of mailbags we've talked about him. But I'll give you a brief thought on him. He's 25 years old. He's got a lot of potential. There are some red flags coming from Japan on him. The biggest negative on Murakami is that he doesn't play a lot of defense. He's not a good defender. So how do I envision him with Pete Alonso? I probably don't. I think it's the same thing as Bregman. I think they would view Murakami as a flat-out replacement for Pete, because if they sign both of them, well, who's DHing? Probably Murakami. And then when Pete DHs, Murakami plays the field, and everything we've heard is that he's not a great defender. So Munetaka Murakami feels like an Alonso replacement. He's younger. He's only 25. He's one of those free agents where the age would excite you, but there's just so much unknown. I've said this a few times. I'll say it again if you haven't heard it. I know the numbers on his batting average on fastballs above 93 miles per hour. I think it's like 095. I'm not overly concerned about it because I think he will make adjustments. I think coming to the major leagues where you see so many more high-octane fastballs, you have no choice but to see it more, make more adjustments. I don't think he's going to be an 095 hitter facing 93-mile-per-hour fastballs. But I think Murakami is more of an Alonso replacement, and I'd prefer Pete Alonso. Cody Bellinger. We've talked a lot about Cody over the last few weeks. The idea of him being here in conjunction with Alonso and being this A-plus defender and left, center, right, first, where you can DH Pete, then you can DH Nimmo, you could even DH Soto if they were willing, and also play center field until someone takes it, specifically Carson Bench. I've heard that repeated a lot lately, so this is certainly an idea that's gone around, the appeal of Cody Bellinger. That's how I envision him. So if the Mets sign Cody Bellinger tomorrow, my reaction would be cautious optimism. Because if Cody Bellinger is the replacement for Pete Alonso, the replacement, not in conjunction, and he's the big bat that they add, so there's no other substantial bat added to this roster, I'd be disappointed because I don't think Cody Bellinger is Pete Alonso. I don't think he's very close to Pete Alonso. He is a little bit younger, but not a lot. He's 30 and will be 31 in the middle of July. And really, since his MVP caliber season, or his MVP season back in 2019, which is a long time ago, his offensive numbers have been inconsistent. He's been up and down. And even his best seasons, to me, are not as good as Pete Alonso. So I view Cody Bellinger two different ways. If he's a replacement for Pete, I'd be disappointed. If he is signed in conjunction with either Pete or another big bat, let's say Murakami in this case, I would be excited because I love the idea of Bellinger being on this team as a guy who plays every day and plays a different position. So the Met DH spot has been god-awful. In fact, we could play a game. It's a fun, depressing game, and that would be who's DH'd the most times in New York Mets history? And that would include, you know, 97 through 2021, where there was a designated hitter in American League road ballparks. But obviously, over the last four seasons, we've had the DH all the time. Do you know who has DH'd the most times in New York Met history? I'm going to give you the answer. It's rhetorical. So play the game. Give you 10 seconds. Everyone say a name, whether you're live on the YouTube chat or you are downloaded the Rico Bronya and you're in your car all by your lonesome. Who do you think is DH'd more than any other person in the history of the New York Mets? The answer is Daniel Vogelbach. Who has DH'd the second most times in New York Mets history? The answer is J.D. Martinez. Who is DH'd the third most times in Mets history? The answer is Mark Vientos. 78 now we're down to. Followed by Starling Marte, Pete Alonso, J.D. Davis, Jesse Winker, and then Mike Piazza. And remember, Mike only did it, you know, as a on a road game in interleague play. So I bring this up because the Met DH spot since 2022 has been a walking nightmare. While Cody Bellinger may never DH, he would be the designated hitter in thought because he's the bat who's playing every day and forcing someone else to DH, whether it's Pete Alonso or Brandon Nimmo or Juan Soto or whomever. And that's appealing. So even though Cody Bellinger wouldn't DH 126 times to replace Daniel Vogelbach atop the all-time Mets DH list, he would essentially take that spot in the lineup, and I find that very, very appealing. To where my dream offseason has now become, at least offensively, Pete Alonso and Cody Bellinger. If you gave me Pete Alonso and Cody Bellinger, and that's it, and I could fill out the rest of the roster via young players I already have or minor trades, I'm good to go. I go to war, baby. I probably at that point would bring back Starling Marte, but I don't even have to because I would have a lineup every day that would feature, let's say, because Bellinger, again, is playing a different position every day. So let's say Bellinger in left, Bench in center, Soto in right, Nimmo at DH, Pete at first base. I give a young guy an opportunity at second. Maybe it's Ronnie Mauricio. Maybe it's Jet Williams. Maybe it's even Luis Santalacuna because I've traded McNeil. Lindor at short. Beatty at third, Alvarez behind the plate, let's go. And before Bench is ready, no problem, Bellinger plays center, and Vientos gets the opportunity to DH. That would cure my issues with the lack of offense from a year ago, where I'd feel, wow, they got better offensively, they clearly got better defensively, because anytime Cody Bellinger plays, he's an upgrade defensively, I'm good. But we're not going to give up on the podcast now because we still have a lot more players to go through. I'm just telling you that's my dream scenario the more we talk about it. Josh Naylor. We talked a lot about Josh Naylor in the replacing Pete Alonso edition of the Rico. He is on a lot of levels like a really solid backup plan for Pete. He isn't the big bat. He's a different kind of bat. Much like a few of the players we talked about, doesn't strike out a lot. He's still relatively young. He's going to be 29 in the middle of June. So one of the younger free agents. I'm a little concerned about how he's going to age. But if you can get him on a 3 or 4 year deal, you're not signing him for that particularly long of a time where you have to worry too much about the aging. If you sign Josh Naylor to that 3 or 4 year contract, I still think you need another bat dub. Because now you have replaced Alonso defensively at first base. But now I think maybe you do go Murakami. Maybe that's the combination. Because then Murakami mostly DHs. You feel okay about that. You got two pretty good bats to replace Pete. Or Kyle Schwarber. I mean, maybe that's the answer. Maybe if you lose Pete and you go Kyle Schwarber and Josh Naylor, you feel like even though you lose the versatility at designated hitter, because Kyle's going to do it all the time, you've improved yourself at first base. Kazuma Okamoto is a third baseman we've talked about, right-hand hitter. He's projected to get about a 3-year contract, $60 million. He made a comment the other day when he was asked, are you looking to play for a winner? And he said, I'm looking to play with whoever wants me. I'm like, okay. I am drawn in a little bit by Okamoto because of his defense, because of his ability to play third base and first base. But now you got to think about it. Okay, you've signed Okamoto. Still need another bat. Where does he fit? Is he the third baseman and maybe you're more prone to trading Brett Beatty? Does he play first base with Alonso mostly DHing, assuming you re-sign Pete? So I go back and forth on the Okamoto fit, but I am higher on Okamoto than I am Murakami because of his defense and the versatility he brings.
Black Friday savings are here at the Home Depot, which means it's time to add new cordless power to your collection. Right now, when you buy a select battery kit from one of our top brands like Ryobi or Milwaukee, you'll get a select tool from that same brand for free. Click into one of our best deals of the season and stock up on tools for all your upcoming projects. Get Black Friday savings happening now at the Home Depot. Limit one per transaction. Exclusions apply. Full eligible tool list in-store and online.
Introducing Oakley Meta Vanguard, the new performance AI glasses designed for athletes. With hands-free capture on an action-ready ultra-wide camera, powerful open-ear speakers, and built-in Meta AI that syncs with your Garmin devices for real-time insights while you train. Take your performance to the next level with Oakley Meta Vanguard. Athletic intelligence is here. Learn more on meta.com.
Let's get to some of the other free agents that we haven't talked as much about, but are certainly interesting. Eugenio Suarez is a free agent. Remember him at the trade deadline. Very big name at the trade deadline. He's 34 years old. He's going to be 35. I view Suarez right now as a third baseman, but really a designated hitter. He is not a great defender at all. He hit the 36 home runs with Arizona. When he got traded to Seattle, he did very little. Still hit for pop, but hit for a very low batting average. His OPS dipped. And really, if you look at Suarez's career, he is a guy who hits for a ton of power, but can strike out a billion times and not give you defense. So he's almost the opposite of Luis Arraez. He's the one-trick pony, except the one trick is hitting a crap ton of home runs. I don't see a fit here. I don't. I think the only way he would fit is as a right-handed bat, as the right-handed designated hitter. But I'd almost rather give Mark Vientos that clear opportunity. I mean, Suarez is 34 years old. I think we've seen the best of him. So I think Suarez probably fits more as a trade deadline acquisition if your young players fail. I think that's a part of the appeal of July 31st, that you want to give your young players an opportunity to take a job and be the answer. And if things fail, oh, Suarez is available at the deadline. Maybe he fits. So I don't have a particular interest in him. Another guy from the Seattle Mariners who's interesting is Jorge Polanco. Polanco is a switch hitter. And I kind of look at his view or his defense and say, okay, where does he fit? Because he has basically become an all-the-time second baseman. He played shortstop early in his career. Not that that would help around here, but he's a second baseman. So where does he fit? And the answer is not really. I mean, I think Polanco could only fit in the Arraez role I mentioned earlier, where he's a guy who's capable of hitting 20 to 25 home runs. He's a guy capable of hitting 260, 265, you know, give you a mid-70s OPS, like a relatively productive player. You bring him in as your second baseman until one of the young players takes the job, and then he becomes a most of the time designated hitter. That's how I would view a Jorge Polanco. He's 32 years old. He'll be 33 in the middle of July. Don't see the greatest fit with him. JT Realmuto. JT Realmuto fits in one way, and that is if my Tarek Skubal proposal ever went through, which many episodes ago I had mentioned I would offer Francisco Alvarez, David Peterson, and two prospects for Tarek Skubal. That would be a way to get Detroit's attention. I don't know how realistic that is. That was my own idea. So I think the idea of Alvarez being traded is unlikely, though you never know. You never know what happens during an offseason of discussion. That's the only way Realmuto would make sense, where you would sign a veteran catcher to replace Alvarez, who you had just traded. Not likely, not a high probability, but I also think the decline is on for JT. He has declined the last four consecutive years. Played a ton. He's 35 years old on opening day, so it would not be ideal to end up in that situation, but it would only be in the case of Alvarez being traded.
Now, I will say that there is a second option here. If the Mets choose not to fill in a permanent DH, like someone that's just going to be DH, which I feel like they want the flexibility, and you don't trade Alvarez, the one thing we could say is Alvarez has been a good hitter. Like, mm-hmm. not saying we're questioning his defense at all, but you bring in JT and you have him and Alvarez on the team, you can push Alvarez to maybe DH a little bit more and give him an ability to, or access to, a guy like JT, who's an unbelievable, you know, defensive play, pitch selection, catcher. He's good at a lot of different areas. So he does have value beyond just playing.
The idea of carrying three catchers, which I'm not against, because you deem Alvarez as such an offensive force that you want to DH him. And by the way, if that ever happened where Alvarez becomes such an offensive force where the Mets are better off using him at designated hitter once or twice a week, I would be all for carrying a third catcher, because I think it's very dangerous to only have two catchers and have a catcher, one of them, DHing once or twice a week. So I'm not even dismissing that idea. I just don't think JT or Realmuto would be the catcher you'd bring in. It's probably another light hitting defensive first catcher, because that guy's not going to play a lot. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, Luis Torrens is a guy who glove wise you want out there when Alvarez isn't. And the other thing that Torrens did last year was, even though he didn't put up good offensive numbers, he was clutch. He was the ideal backup catcher. So I think if we ever got to the point where the Mets were carrying three catchers, it would probably be someone from this farm system or a light hitting catcher they sign. I know Vic Caratini is a free agent as well. Even he would be above the pay grade, because you're just not paying a lot of money for a guy who's a third catcher. So I don't think it even fits there. I think the only way it fits is if Alvarez is traded, which, again, could happen. It's the offseason. You never know. I just don't think it's likely.
And here's the other thing, too, is there's a high probability, because if you follow the bouncing ball, Francisco Alvarez is going to miss a ton of games because he always gets hurt.
That is true.
So why not back yourself up on that? No?
Yes, but they're not with JT Realmuto. I know that was one of your suggestions during the Hoffman Mets, my Mets plan idea, but not going to happen. Ryan O'Hearn is another free agent who's really developed into a nice little career. He's 32 years old. He'll be 33 in the middle of July. Was having a tremendous season for the Baltimore Orioles before he got traded to San Diego, and played well for them too. And if you look at the years before that with Baltimore, the last 2 years, he's turned himself into a productive player. He wasn't much with Kansas City, but one of the rare guys who at the age of 29 and 30 became a really good player. So again, the way I view Ryan O'Hearn is, if the Mets signed him as a Pete Alonso replacement, it would be tough to swallow. He's a better defender than Pete. He also can play the outfield. He's had some pretty good productive years over the last couple of years. Last year, 800 OPS, 17 home runs. But Ryan O'Hearn could be a lighter version of Cody Bellinger. When we talk about Bellinger, we talk about how he's not going to DH, but he fills that DH hole, that bat that we don't know, because he'll force other guys to DH. He'll play left field, center field, right field, first base, the whole thing. Ryan O'Hearn can do that, but he really can't put center field into the equation. But as a left fielder, which he's done, and a right fielder, which he's done, he can give you some adequate defense in the corner outfield spots. He can give you really good defense at first base, which probably forces Pete to be a 50-50 player, where maybe he only DHs, or I should say plays first base 80-85 games, the rest of the time he DHs. And so that would be a way for Stearns to improve the lineup, because you've just added Ryan O'Hearn, he's going to play a lot, and also improve your defense at least at first base. He doesn't do it as much in the outfield the way Bellinger does, because Bellinger's a Gold Glove caliber outfielder. Ryan O'Hearn can play the outfield. I've read he's decent out there, maybe even an upgrade over Brandon Nimmo, but not nearly as much as Cody Bellinger.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Again, if you sign him to replace Pete in terms of being the everyday first baseman, you got to get a big bat elsewhere, whether that's Kyle Schwarber or someone else. O'Hearn really struggled against left-handed pitching for a while. He's a left-handed hitter. But last year actually had a really good year against left-handed pitching. Hopefully that's not an outlier. Last year, he was actually better against lefties than righties, had an 832 OPS. So he has definitely grown as a guy that hits left-handed pitching and not a guy that you have to sit all the time. I mean, the career numbers are kind of crazy. Like, his career OPS against lefties is 642. And last year it was 832. So it was a big year. Does that mean you want him to face lefties all the time? Probably not. You probably sit him selectively. But nevertheless, I think O'Hearn is an interesting fit. By the way, I interrupt this, Rico Bronya, to give you breaking news that impacts something we talked about a few minutes ago, and that's Josh Naylor. Josh Naylor is no longer on the market. So we began the Rico by talking about all these free agents. In fact, 5 minutes ago, I mentioned Josh Naylor as a pretty good backup plan. Well, he is one of the first major free agents to come off the market, because Josh Naylor is signing a 5-year contract to remain with the Seattle Mariners.
Wow. Look at that.
So I'm glad. This is the thing. I'm glad we were on doing the Rico while it happened, because someone in the car listening saying, Josh Naylor, he already signed. Hey, just wait. Just wait a few minutes on the Rico. We'll get there. So Naylor off the market, 5-year contract to go back to the Seattle Mariners. 5-year deal for Naylor. Younger than Pete, 28 years old. He was projected to get about a 3 or 4 year deal. Seattle clearly wanted him back. How does that affect Alonso with us? The way I think it would affect us is, A, Seattle's out if you thought the Mariners were a threat. I never particularly did, but you know, they were around. And then B, yes, there's one less option for the New York Mets with Josh Naylor coming off the market as we do the deep dive.
All right, so again, there's no money right now. We haven't seen anything. It's just all just 5-year deal. But is the market considered to be set now? Has the market been set? Like, is this now Pete Alonso has something to work with here?
Not really. I mean, Josh Naylor is not that big hulking slugger. I mean, I know they play the same position, so I guess that's the similarity, but they're very different very different players. So I don't think it sets the market. Now, I think Pete Alonso is looking at, I think Pete Alonso is looking at the $30 million he made last year and saying, I want that again, except now I want a 5 or 6 year deal. So I don't think Naylor's deal, I don't think it impacts it. Just my initial reaction to the signing. I don't think it changes that much.
What do you think he's going to make per year?
I don't know. When you see the information, let me know.
I will.
That's what I'll tell you. Some of the other lower-end free agents that are at least worth discussing. Number one is Paul Goldschmidt. Paul Goldschmidt had a weird year with the Yankees last year. He got off to a really good start, and he fell off. Here's what's funny about Goldschmidt and how he could fit this team. Because he's still a good defender. He's not the defender he used to be, but he's still a good defender. If you are looking for improved defense with Pete playing more times at designated hitter, does it make sense to have a guy like Paul Goldschmidt? I lean towards no, because he doesn't do much else. He can't play other positions. So I would want a guy who could play first base at a high level defensively, but also can play other positions. He doesn't do that. Miguel Andujar, as a right-handed bat who could DH, is a free agent. Rhys Hoskins, too, is another guy who fits that bar. Not good defenders. I mean, Andujar, you could actually put at third base or the outfield, technically. He's done it before, but isn't going to do it at a high level. I look at Mark Vientos, unless I'm trading him, unless a Vientos trade comes together. I look at Hoskins, Andujar as like Vientos-like players. Not good defensively. Well, Goldschmidt. I didn't say Goldschmidt good. I said Hoskins and Andujar. Goldschmidt, I'm already done with. We already talked about him. Not really a great fit. Yeah, he'd improve the defense. Doesn't have versatility. Andujar and Hoskins, to me, are almost variations of Vientos if you trade him. Otherwise, I'd prefer just to keep Mark and give him that opportunity to win at-bats by hitting as mostly a designated hitter. Marcelo Zuna, man, I don't want to waste my time talking about this guy. I think he's a scumbag, and I think sometimes you have to draw a line in the sand and say, I don't want that guy on my team. So he's killed the Mets. I know that. And right-handed bat, DH, sure, as a baseball player, would he be a good fit? Yeah, I don't want to root for him. Now, the Mets sign him, I'll yell about it, and then I will root for him because we have no choice as fans. Not going to buy his jersey or anything like that. I'd root for him to help the team, but I'd rather him not be here. Dom Smith. Dom Smith is an interesting guy. The issue with Dom is similar to Paul Goldschmidt in that you bring him in, and I'm doing this in conjunction with Alonso hopefully coming back. Plays first base a bunch. Great. Let's Pete DH, but that player can't do much else. That's the appeal of a Ryan O'Hearn, or more specifically a Cody Bellinger, or even Kazuma Okamoto, because he could play third base. You don't want to be stuck with just a first baseman. We've talked about Harrison Bader. I do think Harrison Bader makes sense for this team because he would eventually be a fourth outfielder slash, if he's producing in that Bellinger role, a guy who pushes someone to designated hitter. So Bader could come here, be the center fielder, have that opportunity. And if he produces the way he did last year for Minnesota and for Philadelphia, even with the Carson Benj coming up, Bader could find a way to play by playing a lot of left field, by playing some right field, by playing center field and forcing those guys to DH. Obviously, that would be dependent on, you know, what a Vientos does, if they bring back a Marte, what a Marte does. I do think with Bader, he's not what he was last year. Like, I wouldn't sign him expecting him to hit 17 home runs and hit 277 and have an 800 OPS, but I would be signing him expecting him to give me really good defense wherever I put him in the outfield. And that would be appealing with Harrison Bader. Can Tyrone Taylor do that for now? Sure. Who else we got? We got Cedric Mullins. No thanks. Luis Renjifo, a guy who gives you great versatility, can play second, can play short, can play third, coming off a really bad year. Mitch Garver could maybe fit that role Hoff was talking about having a third catcher. Same with Danny Jansen, who's a free agent. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, no thank you. I think the Mets, again, have enough of their own internal young players who can play numerous positions. Same goes for Willy Castro, who also can, I mean, basically play everywhere. What I've heard about with Willy Castro is that even though he plays everywhere and he's a switch hitter and that part's appealing, and he had a pretty productive year last year with Minnesota, didn't do anything for Chicago after he got traded, he's not really great defensively anywhere. So I see a guy like Willy Castro, similar to some of these other versatile players like IKF, and I'm like, you know what? I'd rather give my young player a chance to be that guy. Justin Turner. I've always loved Justin Turner, but don't see a fit. Wilmer Flores, I'd always love to have Wilmer Flores back, but what's he doing here? First base, third base, right-handed bat? I feel like it's redundant. Josh Bell doesn't do it for me. He's not giving you plus defense at first base. So really, what's the point? Jason Hayward? I can't believe Jason Hayward is still around. I mean, seriously. Remember when Jason Hayward was like the next young superstar? Ahmed Rosario, who did a nice job for the Yankees for a limited amount of time as a right-handed bat off the bench. Paul DeJong I'd be interested in just so he doesn't kill us anymore. And I got called out by one of the Rico emailers saying, you just want to collect Met killers so they don't kill the Mets anymore. And I'm like, yeah, what's wrong with that strategy? Is there something wrong with that? Anyhow, that's a deep dive on a lot of these free agents. Josh Naylor off the board. He re-signs with the Seattle Mariners. The conclusion, and I always like to have a conclusion after talking about all this, there's a lot of guys who can fit here. There's a lot of guys who, with the right combo of signings, make sense. But my preferable spot right now remains bringing Alonso back. I still think that's the best scenario. Are there decent secondary plans? Sure. But my number one hope would be Pete's here, Cody Bellinger's here. I don't know how realistic that is. I mean, the Yankees may not want to lose another bidding war to the Mets, so that price could get very high, and I think there's an end there. Like, if I'm the Mets, for the Yankees, you know, go listen to the Hensley Mullins. I'm sure some will have opinions on this. On my end of things, doing a Mets-centric podcast, eventually there's a contract you walk away from with Cody Bellinger. He's a nice player. He's not the guy you stay at the table with like Soto and say, I'm just going to get him, and I don't care how far it goes. But Alonso Bellinger is probably number one, and I think has a level of realism. Alonso Bregman would be also up there. I just don't think that's realistic. In a non-Alonso world, I probably lean, I don't even know, probably I would lean towards a Schwarber-Bregman combo, if that's even realistic, and maybe it's not, but I would go first base more on the internal cheaper end. I'd upgrade third base with Bregman. I'd have the big bat with Schwarber. But no matter how you cut it, I think the preference is Pete. And I think a lot of these free agents make sense if the right combo is signed.
Now, I question to you. That's your opinion on what you'd prefer. What do you think the Mets would actually do? Because I have tons of preferences, but my guess is they're going to go for Bellinger, and they'll go for – I had Naylor as the first base, but now he's gone. But I feel like Bellinger's going to be their key guy. I bet Luis Arraez then is their other big move. So those two guys are on the Mets. That's what I'm thinking.
I did on the Evan and Tiki program, we did free agency bingo, where we all went out there and we picked all the free agents and we just predicted where we think each guy would end up. And what I said on the air there was Pete would be gone. I hope I'm wrong, but that's what I said. And I thought that the Phillies would actually be the high bidder on Kyle Tucker and Kyle Schwarber would end up with the Mets. And so he would be the big bat that they add. Because I think Stearns knows that losing Pete's bat and not replacing it is not ideal. But he wants to improve the defense. And Schwarber just being a designated hitter and saying, okay, we've improved. We replaced the bat, which you do with Schwarber. I admit that. Like, I'm taking the emotion out of it. if you look at what Kyle's done the last 3 years, what Pete's done the last 3 years, you've replaced him. If you've replaced him, if you sign Kyle Schwarber, I am not going to argue that. And that gives you wiggle room to improve yourself defensively at first base and not have to go too nuts because you've just gotten Schwarber's bat. So my prediction, and I tell you, offseason predictions are the toughest to make.
Yeah.
Because what is it really based on? We're predicting what we think a GM is going to do and what the agent, I don't know. I'd probably say Schwarber, Okamoto could be the combination that they ended up with. But I hope it's Pete. And I hope that people realize that as we've done this podcast, as we've done this, Rico, this is a New Year's resolution I've made in 2026. We've talked about Alonso and wanting him back. I have never brought up hitting 500 home runs as a Met. I haven't brought up lifetime Met. I haven't brought up, and Joe does a great job of doing it every time. We lost Sivo, we lost Strawberry, which, by the way, he's right about. I'm not even disagreeing with him. I'm saying I haven't even used those as my reasons. And I hope that even if people disagree with me, they could at least respect that. I have been coming from a pure baseball standpoint when talking about all of this. So we will see what happens. But your thoughts on the deep dive of position players, you can email us to ricob@gmail.com. We'll do a deep dive on relief pitchers coming up in a couple of days. And then we'll create a trade market. Trade targets, starting pitchers. Trade target position players. Trade target relievers. So we'll go through all the potential trade targets as well. Now, I remind you, subscribe to the Rico Bronya. We always give you podcasts live on YouTube Sunday night, usually in your inbox, either Sunday night or Monday morning. We tend to do Ricos on Wednesday nights as well. Same thing in your inbox, Wednesday night or Thursday morning. We've been doing a lot of mailbags on Friday nights. Again, downloaded Saturday morning. When there's breaking news, though, and there's going to be, I mean, naturally, it's the offseason, we try as fast as we can to give you a Rico Bronya. That's why you should subscribe, because if you subscribe, you will never miss it. Or also, in conjunction, subscribe to the WFAN YouTube page. Same thing. When we go live, you click on it, you watch it, you listen to it, and you can yell at us and be upset with our baseball and Mets opinions. It's the way the game goes. But email us to ricob@gmail.com, and we will continue to try to give you mailbags every single week. Thank you very much for hanging out with us on another edition of The Rico.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
This is an Etsy holiday ad, but you won't hear any sleigh bells or classic carols. Instead, you'll hear something original. The sound of an Etsy holiday, which sounds like this. Now that's special. Want to hear it again? Get original and affordable gifts from small shops on Etsy. For gifts that say, I get you, shop Etsy. Tap the banner to shop now.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.